Hi, you're listening to After the Collapse on RadioRegent.com, a radio show exploring issues relating to economic exploitation. To learn more about us, please visit afterthecollapse.net to read about and listen to archived recordings of our show. This week, we present part one of the Regent Park Toronto mayoral debate held at Ada Slate Hall at Daniel Spectrum on October 8th, 2014. Frontrunners Olivia Chow, John Tory, and Ari Goldkind, who Doug Ford canceled the day before, use a lively and substantive debate to offer their solutions for problems vital to the Regent Park community, including affordable housing, child poverty, community safety, youth employment, and food security. Special thanks to the Regent Park Mayoral Debate Organizing Committee and Regent Park Focus.
So I'd like to start by calling on John Tory to introduce himself and tell us a bit about his platform, and you have 3 minutes to do so. Please begin.
Well, thank you very much. I won't spend too much time introducing myself on the theory that with us having been around for so many debates and campaigning for 9 months, if you want to ask questions about me, I'm quite happy to do that. But I will say, as a lifelong Leaf fan, the allure of opening night tonight, even on TV, was compelling, but not as compelling as being here in Regent. I have spent a good deal of time in this community, mainly as a volunteer, to help out where I could, and I'll mention a couple of things where I was trying to help, but also to come to understand some of the challenges and issues facing the community, whether it was the school dropout rate that was at such an enormous level and has been dramatically reduced, and the challenges posed by and the opportunities presented by the redevelopment. I was over at the Regent Park Health Center quite early on, hearing pioneers like Carolyn Acker talk about the program and the dreams she had for it, and was there during meetings subsequent to that to celebrate the success of the program here, but also to celebrate the fact that it has been modeled from start right here as a grassroots initiative across the country. But it reminds me of the fact when I mentioned just that one, and you can mention a number of others, and I'm sure we'll talk about it tonight, that so many of these programs that can and have done so much good are operating on short funding cycles where they get funding for 3 years or they get funding for 2 years. And just as some of the staff people are getting to know, whether it's the kids or the families or whoever the client groups are, the funding runs out and the programs come to an end. And we have to change that. We simply have to change that. And that's going to involve a lot of work at the City Hall, at Queen's Park, and in Ottawa, because all of the governments are guilty of doing that. I visited from the planning stages through construction to move in the areas that, of course, have been revitalized so far. In the Regent Park revitalization. And I think there are many, many successes to be found in this revitalization, and often use it myself in talking about this across the city as a model in some respects. But I know there are some issues with respect to things like the relocation that have not been handled as sensitively as they might be, and I think we have to look for ways to improve that. We today have another success story as part of that, which is the substantial investment made by the private sector to create jobs here. And I'm talking about private sector concerns like the bank and the grocery store and the Tim Hortons and so on, which have created a significant number of jobs, many held by local people. But the bottom line is, we have a lot of work to do. We have a lot of work to do. And I see as my priority as mayor to make sure that the One Toronto I often talk about isn't just about ending these moment conflicts between downtown and the suburbs and so on, but to make sure we bring everybody together in the entire city and make sure there aren't neighborhoods anywhere that are brought behind, that we use our efforts and the platform that we're given to create more partnerships between the private sector, the non-profit sector, the government, the labor unions, and others to create jobs and to create opportunity and to make sure things are handled here in as sensitive a way as possible, whether it be community safety, relocation programs, or otherwise. We'll talk about all those things tonight. Thank you for having me here tonight.
Olivia Chow.
Good evening. How are you tonight? Oh, you can do better than that. How are you tonight? A few months ago, I was here at this space where Rice, Edutainment, Randall, Azure, and with a group of young people were using art, poetry, and music to talk about the hope and the dreams for this neighborhood. And that the passion and the commitment to make a difference was phenomenal. And then a few months later, I came to a barbecue in the park, and I walked into the aquatic center, the swimming pool, and saw the families having such great time. And I felt the energy of Regent Park, a place where people believe in supporting each other, and they ask the question what they can do with each other for each other. And that is so strong. It's that spirit that has driven me right through my political career of what we can do for and with each other. And I see that when you revitalize this beautiful neighborhood, working with my friend Pam McConnell, who's here tonight, and George Smitherman, who is also here tonight, they've done so much work with all the local residents. Not only are they replacing all the housings that are now revitalized, they're building more affordable housing. And while doing that, they have created 600 new jobs for young people. And that is important. Yes, it provides hope. And it is this model that I want to make sure that we have all across the city. It's a model that say to the businesses that do have contracts with the city, that they will sign a community benefits agreement, and that they will hire young people while they redevelop a neighborhood, while they invest in a neighborhood. Since that's your tax dollar, let's put it to work. And I plan to create 5,000 jobs all across the city using the exact model that Regent Park have done. So you are leading the way. And yet we still see youth violence. And we saw the shootings recently. There's so much more we can do. And let us pledge to say that, let us support each other, invest in affordable housing, in jobs, in better support for families, because together we can create a better, a more caring, a more fair community and city right now. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And next I'd like to call on Ari Goldkind.
Thank you very much. Good evening, everybody. It's great to be here with you all. Thank you. Tonight, I think, is going to be a very interesting night because the dynamics are different. Tonight, I'm going to want to talk about policy. And I'm going to ask each and every one of you and everybody watching at home to focus on the difference between the three people on this stage and their views of the policies that affect your lives. I've said for some time now that you cannot be competing for the title of the most progressive yet most conservative candidate for mayor in the city. You cannot be all things to all people. We're either a world-class city or we're a city of NIMBY. And if any of you know what I mean by that, Toronto is growing very, very rapidly. And we are not looking after our own. And every policy that I speak of at reformayor.com is all about truly making sure that the people who have been forgotten and left behind aren't. So let me tell you what I think the number one issue for tonight is, both in this debate, and it should be discussed in every home throughout Toronto. And that's the issue of income inequality. Income inequality permeates every single issue we will discuss tonight. It is the root cause of almost each and every problem in Toronto that reflects the question of inequality, which concerns me and which my whole candidacy is focused on. Now, different candidates play on this in different ways. We know how a certain nation plays on it, yet very few of its residents are better today than they were 4 years ago. But you also have people on this stage with their low tax or in and around the rate of inflation position that have adopted that thinking but explain it in a much nicer way. They say efficiencies. They say waste. They say seniors tell me. Well, that doesn't move the dial on this issue. And if you think any of this isn't municipal, I assure you that it is. The mayor's chair wields enormous power, both in this city and through this country. And being the mayor should stand for something good, positive, and most importantly, courageous. In my respectful view, it would be a cop-out to say we cannot make significant changes without calling our friends Kathleen or Steve. We have to take matters into our own hands so that on October 28th, not the 27th, but on the 28th, we stop pointing fingers. For 50 cents a day to the average household, we can raise $1 billion of revenue in my first term. And with that, for the issues we're discussing tonight, housing, income, and food security, boy, can we ever make a difference to the lives of each and every Torontonian. I look forward to discussing these issues with you tonight. Thank you.
Selected community questions will be for Ari Goldkind. Who can respond for 2 minutes? Your co-candidates will have 2 minutes to respond to each. You will have a minute for your veto. So the first question is, if elected as our mayor, how do you intend to address the lack of affordable housing stock that is available in the downtown core? And what would you do to decrease the ever-growing wait list of subsidized housing units?
You first.
You want to stand? If you're standing, sitting.
Stand.
Okay. All right, well, you just heard from me, so I will continue on. Now, let me continue where I was in my opening, because as I said, it really ties into this issue. Affordable housing. You've heard various candidates make certain promises. They will do this, and they will do that. Well, that's not true. They only will if council supports their vision. And thank you. And what I'm going to talk to you about now, for about a minute and a half, is what I think council will get behind. If any of you saw the Globe and Mail today, or the Vital Signs report, which is a pretty important thing that I invite you all to look up or Google tonight, after we're done with this debate, it talks about how Toronto's on a fiscal cliff, that we're essentially out of money. So on the issue of affordable housing, particularly the waitlist, there are some ideas that we can do right away. You must incentivize developers and landlords to understand that there's a win here for them, that it's not charity to address this issue. And you do that in two ways. You reduce development charges so that they can actually see it as a profit or a win for them, because if you don't make this a win-win, any of you who know about negotiation know it's not going to happen. You also have to give developers or those dealing with the new supply tax incentives or tax credits to increase the stock. But the wait list was the second part to that question, because people can't wait for supply to be developed. So it would be very important for me to look at the existing vacancy rate. There are private apartments that sit empty. Many of you know City Place has international investors, and those apartments sit empty. We have to find a way. And it's very difficult to do, but as mayor, I would take this on personally and lead council. I would try and find a way to supplement those on low income by giving a subsidy through the city to fill those empty apartments so that everybody has the same home to go to at night that the three of us on this stage have. Thank you very much.
Well, it's tough when you spend most of your income on paying rent, and then by close to the end of the month, there's not much money left, and you have to struggle to find ways to pay for groceries. That's why building affordable housing is something that is so critically important. And I pledge to build 15,000 units of affordable housing within the next 4 years. How do we do that? We ask developers that are building big towers to put 20% of these units, these buildings, 20% of it needs to be affordable. And the city will defer to take the development charges. They can have a bit higher density, and we'll take the bonus and also make sure that the money goes back to making the unit affordable housing. We'll fast track the approval. Those are ways that have been done before, and that we can do it again to build more affordable housing. I will also use the example that's being used right here in Regent Park, because you are not only building just replacing the existing affordable housing, you're building two extra co-ops. You have done at 60 Richmond another building, and in all, at the end of the day, 500 more units of affordable housing. That is an example that we can use. And I will build it. I pledge I can do it because I have the experience to do that. Mr. Tory doesn't really have a clear plan. He said that he'll take some underground parking, right now above ground parking, ask the developer to put it underground and then use the land to build housing, affordable housing. Well, actually, building underground parking lot is hugely expensive. And why would any developer do that for you if they can't make money from the affordable housing? So it's important to have a concrete plan, workable plan, and yes, we must build affordable housing.
You know, I'll make a bet that if you had asked whether any developer would have the courage and the foresight and the interest in city building to come into this neighborhood and be a pioneer in the redevelopment of Regent Park, that you would have said no one would do that. And somebody did. Because the government formed a partnership with that developer, and I commend the Daniels Corporation for the fact they stepped up and were pioneers in doing this and set an example for the rest of the city. So yes, I'm actually optimistic that there will be developers, in plural, who, if we say we're going to take some pieces of land that exist adjacent to either TCHC developments that presently exist or that are presently parking lots, that there will be somebody who will step up and say, yes, we'll make the investment to put the parking on the first couple of floors or underground, and that we're going to build new units of affordable housing above that, and there'll be a competition of people who want to do it. So that is part of my plan. I would start to actually spend now the city's allocated funds for TCHC repairs. The city has been waiting to spend the money, waiting for the other governments to show up as properly they should. But I think we should get on with the repairs. There's a moral reason and a business reason to start now and then go and advocate, as I will do forcefully, to the other governments that they should have and should now match that investment in making those repairs. Thirdly, I think we have to make better use and further promote the things like the foundation program that make it easier for people to gain an interest in ownership in their housing here in Regent Park and, for that matter, elsewhere. And finally, I think we have to work to try and get whatever changes may be necessary, if there are legal changes necessary, legislative changes, to make it possible for more Section 37 funds to be allocated to affordable housing. And that is something that I will put my determination behind doing, all of those things, and it will be a program that will work and that will create housing units. Thank you.
There's, you know, it's a one-minute rebuttal, and it's for Ari Goldkind. So it'll rotate on the next one. So there's only one rebuttal.
We were trying to keep track of who's going.
Sorry.
No problem.
We got it for you.
So me for a minute?
Yes, okay. And there's only one rebuttal on this question, and then there'll only be one on the next one.
We're doing this on the fly, everybody. Okay, me?
They are.
All right. So let me deal with 1 minute, because I made some points to what you heard there. So very, very quickly in 1 minute. Again, I said, again, because of the dynamic in the room tonight, which I think will be very civil. Everybody, when you're listening to this, if you're in Ms. Chow's camp or Ms. Torrey's camp or Mr. Ford's camp and you're asking yourself a question, the first question should be, where is the money going to come from? And I invite you to look at each of our platforms and satisfy yourself to the answer. Because I explain where the money will come from, and for 50 cents a day, it raises $1 billion to address income inequalities just like this. We are not a broke city, and I don't think we're a cheap city. Two, you can't talk about affordable housing without broadening transit and getting transit to people who don't have the same access as many of us who live on the Bloor Danforth or the Yonge University Spadina line. when we talk about these things, you can't ask developers, you have to incentivize them. They're not going to be our friends unless we incentivize them. And lastly, when the cost of housing is rising more than most people's incomes, we have to take a very good look at a living wage in Toronto, because that is the only way we can maintain fairness and equal things out. Thank you.
Selected questions will be for Ms. Chow. So the second of our pre-selected questions will be for Ms. Chow. Again, you'll have 2 minutes for a response, and your co-candidates will have 2 minutes to respond each, and you'll have a further 1 minute for a rebuttal. So the question is, what would your community safety improvement plan include, and what changes, if any, would you make to decrease incidents of gun violence and sexual assaults in East Toronto? Yeah.
I think I heard the question. It's about gun violence. I don't think more policing is necessarily the solution. In fact, what we need to do is stop racial profiling and stop carding. Yes, I think it hurts. It hurts the community. It hurts young people's concept of who they are. What we need to do is start when the person is young, by creating more affordable, high-quality childcare, which I will do. And we need to create, and I pledge to create at least 3,000 more childcare spaces, because then it would allow the mom or dad to go to work if they want to, and then the kid would grow up strong. After school activities, also really important. We have to support our children and our young people. And many experts will tell you that you have to start when you are young. With having good after-school programs means that they will have a role model, that they will learn a skill, whether it's poetry or music or basketball or art, then they can grow up smart and strong and stay out of trouble. And one other element is that to provide hope in the neighborhood, good jobs and good programs to support our young people. And after the shooting, 6 black candidates came together and signed a letter and said that we must invest in our young people. That's the path forward. Deal with the root cause of the problem. I believe that we have to invest in each other. My entire program on how to do that is right here in my platform. It's something we can do together. I will invest in that money, and so that we can, our children will grow up safe and sound.
Again, you heard the phrase, and again, because this is about policy tonight, not personality, you have to invest now, Ms. Chow says. Again, when you hear that, you need to ask how. That's the difference between my candidacy and the 2 good people to my right. It's most important that each of you, when you hear where's the money going to come from or invest now, you must say how, or else we're right back to 4 years of nothing getting done. To the specific question, when I hear community safety, the first thing that comes to my mind isn't crime. It's actually all of the other things about quality of life. Good street lighting, parks, benches for elderly people. And I think when you talk about community safety, you can't leave out the fact that women, oftentimes in areas all throughout Toronto, are in much more danger or predicaments than men. And we have to address the root causes of that, whether it be domestic violence, whether it be alcohol, these things that just aren't talked about. And I see it in my job on a daily basis. I am not a fan of news releases that go out saying we have to ban handguns when there's an unfortunate shooting. Handguns are illegal. It's easy to do that because it plays well and you're going to get 5 camera trucks turning up. But if you don't address the root causes where people feel stigma, where people feel because they live in a certain area, they're already going to be targeted by police. Unless you address the root causes, and we're going to get into this in a few minutes, of food security, and people don't live well, people don't have their homes repaired, I mean, we didn't talk about that in the last question, but when you live in a home that's left in a state of disrepair because your city can't find the money to pay for it, that's a huge, huge problem. The second to last one is, I'm a person who talks all the time about mental health issues. And if we're going to talk about community safety, we have to make the city much, much safer for the people that we sort of move away from on the subway. We need to move closer to those people on the subway, and that's something that's very, very important to me. And the last thing, in just a few seconds, I've talked about this since the beginning of my campaign, having every police officer in the city wear lapel cameras, because that scares me. Because when we trust the police, we honestly will have a better city, because it works well for both the police and for us. Thank you very much.
And you mentioned the other day, Ari, another benefit from the lapel cameras, which we're going to experiment with, which is that police officers will spend less time in court, and that means they'll be available to do real police work out in the communities, and I think that's another benefit. But I'd like to go through this and pick up on one of the points that's been touched on by my two colleagues, which is the illegal handguns. I would love to see the federal government, and I'll be an advocate as mayor, spending as much time on staunching the flow of illegal handguns into Canada, which is where a lot of them come from, as they do when they sort of frisk you and pat you down for a bottle of wine when you come back from a weekend away. Yeah. Because they're just not making the effort. I'm convinced if they can operate thoroughly to stop you from bringing a bottle of wine or something like that into the country, or measure how many of those you bring, they can do better on guns. I think we do have to have a continued and increased community policing. And I think this is where the resources have to be allocated. And I think that also will include, in terms of not only a continued commitment, but reforms to encounters between the police and citizens of all kinds. I think we have to continue on the work on making the streets and buildings more transparent. If you look at the new buildings with some of the advanced video surveillance equipment, with things like open and well-lit lobbies, as well as the streets in the same regard, I think this is going to help. I think that programs like Pixels for Pistols down here in Regent Park actually worked quite well. They made a difference. Sometimes you see it as a small difference, but it made a difference. There were people who did turn in guns. They had, because that program was there. And then I think it does come back to programs that create jobs, and I would point out that many, many of the jobs, a couple of hundred of them here, were created here solely on account of decisions made by private sector investors like RBC, Tim Hortons, Sobeys, and so on, and also programs like My Regent Park, which has helped with mentoring, it's helped with parenting, it's helped with employment. And so I think programs like that have to be given multi-year secure funding and not face the kind of prospects of all the partners they have involved of having that work come to an end when it's doing so much good. Thanks.
Well, Mr. Tory recently had a meeting with Mr. Harper, a private meeting, and I would guarantee you that he did not ask for money. I saw it in the newspaper. I would guarantee you that he didn't ask for extra dollar to build affordable housing, that he did say to them that we need to have more funding for child care, that we have to stamp the guns that are coming across the border illegally. And there are, because, you know why I asked that question, because I raised that? Because in the entire platform, Mr. Tory does not promise you how many units of affordable housing he's going to build, what kind of child care that he will provide, after school programs. He did not make any promise. The problem with that is that if you don't set a target, it won't get done. And those are the things that must happen right in our neighborhood all across the city. Because empty promises, just saying that those things are important, we'll wait for the private sector to make it happen, it won't work. The reason why Regent Park worked is because TCHC, working with the City of Toronto, made it happen. They say, we will revitalize this neighborhood. It starts with good political leadership right here in this ward and at City Hall. And I know that's what makes it work.
And now for the final question in this round. The question is for Mr. John Tory. You have 2 minutes to respond. Your candidates will have 2 minutes, and you'll have a further minute for rebuttal. Here's the question. Regent Park has a long history of diverse projects to increase food access, including gardens, food banks, and community meal programs. However, across our community and citywide, use of emergency food programs continues to increase, and diet-related health issues are becoming more common, and demand for garden spaces far outpaces supply. So, business, as usual, has not managed to decrease the amount of people in the city who are food insecure. As Mayor of Toronto, what would you do to help ensure that more Torontonians would be able to access good, healthy, and sustainable food?
Well, I'll pick up and start with something that I think is the most fundamental thing that's going to provide the biggest help with this. And I want to just obviously respond to a comment Olivia made just a moment or two ago. The fact is that of many of the jobs that have been created directly and indirectly as a result of the Regent Park revitalization, out of the numbers that Olivia will cite, hundreds of those jobs, hundreds, a big portion of them, were created solely by decisions taken by private sector companies to make that investment in this neighborhood, oftentimes changing their usual investment criteria because they decided they were going to be pioneers in making sure that residents in this area not only had the jobs but had access to the proper services. When I tell people there was a day, not that long ago, when there wasn't really a grocery store of the order of Sobeys, when there wasn't really a bank here, people can't believe that. But those companies stepped up, not because some government person ordered them to do so or passed a law saying they had to. They were persuaded by people, including Daniels and including government leaders and including others, to come in here and create those jobs. And I think the best thing that is going to produce food security for people is them having a job, a good, lasting, productive job. Now, after that, I would say that staff at Toronto Social Services are overworked and are trying to handle the relationships with the food banks and making sure there are other means made available for people to get proper access to proper food. I would say that we need to look at an initiative that's going to try to save money like they're doing in the west end of the city where they have the food flow program where in that case the Daily Bread Food Bank is taking the responsibility for doing a lot of the buying and then supplying food to some of the other agencies that help people at a lower cost, which is going to be helpful. It allows them to do more. I think programs like the Community Food Works programs are also programs that are worthy of expansion. But I think it starts and ends, and I believe this in my heart, with putting people in a position where they're able to afford to buy healthy food, and the best way you're going to do that is to give them a long-term, secure, lasting, productive job, and I think that's what people want anyway. That they have.
I don't think I stood on the last answer, so I'll stand now. So sometimes I hear these answers of these candidates, and I never know what the actual answer is by the time the question's over. So Mr. Tory said something, and again, this allows you to delineate between our plans. He said he believes in his heart of X, Y, and Z, and that's good, and that's where caring starts. But I believe in my wallet, and I think until I'm willing to go into my wallet for a little bit extra a day, because it won't make seniors flee their homes, as you might hear. In fact, it will help seniors. I think when you go to Torontonians and ask them, are you willing to go into your wallet for a few extra cents a day so that the people who are being left behind and forgotten can come up to levels that we can only dream of for some people who don't have the same opportunities? Most people, when you go explain to them what it is, when you sit down as a leader and say, don't be scared, don't have a knee-jerk reaction, that's how you start building security, because security isn't just food security, it's income security, it's having shelter. Now, here are some specific points on the issue. First of all, you have areas of the city, and Regent Park has really made improvements, but you have areas all throughout the city where you can't access a grocery store. It's McDonald's, it's strip malls, there's no nutritious food. There was an article in the New York Times that demonstrated, because in my mind, I always thought it's cheaper for a family of four to buy a meal at McDonald's. It's actually not if you buy healthy food, pasta, bread, salad. It's not more expensive to eat healthy. People don't have a lot of time on their hands. That's why we have to make sure it's an easier city to get around. Very importantly, we have hydro corridors throughout the city. Many of you might know in Hyde Park, people grow things. But we have hydro corridors with wasted space. People want to plant and garden here. It's not a pie-in-the-sky thing. And the last two things are, we waste so much food in this city. We waste so much food from grocery stores, restaurants. It just gets thrown out. That has to stop. And the last point is, when I see farmers markets are usually in the area that I live, or they're in the area that Mr. Torrey or Ms. Chow live. We have to use city resources, people, and vehicles to get farmers markets of affordable produce and affordable food out to areas of the city that don't have those opportunities. That's my answer. Thank you.
I used to live up the street on St. Jamestown, and when I was growing up, when I was a teenager, my mom and dad didn't have a very good job, didn't pay a whole lot, so time was tough, so I know how important it is to keep every penny to have good food at home. That's shaped my values right through my political career. That's why when I was a school trustee, I helped start a good food in school programs. It's now expanded to a lot of places, but we can do so much more. As your mayor, I would expand that program to 36,000 more children so they have good food in school. You know why it's important? It's important because when you're hungry, you can't learn, you can't focus. It's hard to do well in math or have study well because, if you're hungry, you can't focus. So the second thing that we would do, that I would do, is to create more community garden. I know that Nick Saul and the staff have started the 40 Oak Street Community Garden. I helped start quite a few when I was a city councilor, and it's a really wonderful model, whether you are growing vegetables or having fruit trees. All of that means that you can grow locally, and the kids can see it, and the families can come together, they can plant together, grow together, eat together, harvest together. It brings the community together, it makes it strong, and it provides access to good food. And thirdly, what we can do is work with agencies like FoodShare that would start the good food basket, provide good nutritious food right in the neighborhood. All of those things we can do together. I have the plan. I have the experience. I can deliver results because I know what it takes to make things happen at City Hall.
You know, in some respects, it has something to do with what goes on at City Hall, but it's mostly about leadership from City Hall, because if you think about all these things you've just heard mentioned, all of them, starting, let's say, with the grocery store, because that's going to be the jobs. Jobs are the first place where I started, because Sobeys not only provides a place to get good food, but it provides 81 jobs, most of which went to people in this community. And I think that the more we can have those kinds of jobs, and the more we can have grocery stores like that, that was a decision not made by the government to locate here. It was made by Sobeys themselves in the private sector. And secondly, the community gardens, and we all support that. The community gardens can take place on public or non-profit property, but they can also take place, as they're doing in Thorncliffe Park, as my friends know, based on partnership with the private sector. But I guess the point I'm trying to make is that I think all of these kinds of things involve not so much a government program, per se. It involves government leadership, leadership that can come from the mayor's office, but also partnerships with labor, with business, with non-profit organizations to actually make these things happen. That's the way I think it's going to be best done, including in the area of food. Community gardens, a food share, Sobeys making the investment they did, creating the jobs they did. I think it's going to happen through these partnerships and leadership from City Hall.
Thanks for listening to part one of the Regent Park Toronto mayoral debate held on October 8th, 2014 at Ada Slate Hall. I'm Louis Maroney, and for myself and Jim Vernon, we'd like to thank you for listening to After the Collapse on RadioRegent.com. You can read about and listen to archived episodes of After the Collapse at afterthecollapse.net.